Welcome to Barry Maguire's Tales from the Trenches, real life stories of Canadian real estate investors. Learn more at www.barrymaguire.ca.
All right, so tonight we're going to talk about foreclosures. We've done, by the way, three chats on foreclosures over the years. And if you go to barrymaguire.ca, and just in the search bar put mortgages or foreclosures, quit claims, up will pop those three, and you can read some other details on some other aspects that we're not going to talk about tonight. In the best of managed portfolios, stuff happens. When the oil juggernaut crushes everybody, I don't care how good you are at managing. If your building in Fort McMurray is 60% empty and the rental pool is calling on you to write checks rather than sending you checks, that's tough. And I don't think it's a reflection on anyone's ability to analyze property. So oil is getting us here in Alberta. And in tough times, there's lots more people in trouble. Lots of folks in trouble. They could be in trouble on their personal side, the house you live in. And it could be in trouble on the investment side. There's lots of reasons people are in trouble. You lose your job. You're between tenants for quite a bit of time. The rental market is tough. You get sick. There's lots of reasons that people can't make payments, whether it's on the personal side or whether it is on the investment side. And the kinds of foreclosures that there are vary from, I'm going to miss a couple of payments here, to some of those properties in Fort McMurray. A good example. Yes, bought a property, 12 or 15 years ago for $110,000. The value went to $350,000. Put a mortgage on for $205,000. Not too bad. Worth $350,000. Mortgage of $205,000. Last sale in the building was $150,000. Whoa. So that property is $55,000 underwater. So, you can be a couple of payments or a lot, all over the place. So tonight we're going to talk about three main things. What happens before you're actually in foreclosure and what can you do in those circumstances? We're going to talk about the steps in a foreclosure, and we're going to talk about our little kind of Alberta advantage, which is non-recourse mortgages. And we'll talk about it a bit more, but I think you guys all know or have heard that if you have a conventional mortgage, not CMHC, conventional, and it's in your personal name, and it goes into foreclosure, say in our example, the place where there's a $205,000 mortgage and a $150,000 value, and the bank gets it and sells it, there's a $55,000 gap there, plus $5,000 legal fees, $60,000. The bank cannot come after you for that deficiency of $60,000. All they can do is take the property. If you own it personally, whether you're an investor or whether it's a personal residence. So that's a non-recourse mortgage only in Alberta. We're going to talk about it more. All right. So in the pre-foreclosure side of things, the key thing that every lender says, CMHC says, Genworth, who's another insurer, says, if you go to their websites or talk to anybody, you have to be proactive. You have to be proactive. The lenders want to talk to you. And they want to talk to you, before you miss a payment. If you lose your job and you have a couple of months' notice and there's no prospects and you don't have much savings, you should be able to do a mild projection into the future to say, I'm going to have a cash flow problem here pretty soon. So important to talk to your lender before you're actually in trouble and missing payments. Also, that's bad on your credit if you start missing payments. So talk early. Because as one banker guy said to me, we want the dough, not the dirt. They don't really want to take your property back. Or at least that's what they say. We'll test that later in the presentation because I've got some other things that kind of fly in the face of that. All right, so if you can catch up, you have lots of room to do stuff. You think you can catch up and you've got any reasonable solution, you got lots of room. So let's look at some of these things. CMHC, everybody knows CMHC is Canada Mortgage and Housing Corporation, and I'm just trying to talk for some of the new members here. Canada Mortgage and Housing Corporation are an insurance company. They insure banks and lenders who lend over 80% of the value of the property. So that if the bank lends, you know, 95% on a personal residence and you move in and the bank ends up having to take that property back and they lose $30,000 on the deal, when all is said and done, the bank goes to CMHC, shows them the accounts, and CMHC gives the bank the $30,000. So that's what CMHC does. It insures lenders against loss of loans when you're over 80%. Like all insurance companies, what do insurance companies hate more than anything? Pay out. That's it. They hate to pay. CMHC is no different. They don't want to pay those $30,000 claims. They don't want to take the property back. They don't want any of that stuff. So if you go to the CMHC website, what do they say? First thing, talk to your mortgage pro, your broker, your person at the branch, if that's where you got your if that's where you got your financing. So what can you do to actually fix problems, especially if you're in the I've got temporary trouble side of things? You can change your interest rates. Perhaps you have a variable rate and you might be able to change it to a lower fixed interest rate. Maybe what you did was you had a variable rate set higher than you had to set it. And banks like you to do that sometimes to protect against rates that go flip-flop. So you can sometimes move your interest rates around to get them lower and pay a lower payment. Lenders will also defer payments. If you go into them and say, okay, here's the story. Lost my job in Fort McMurray, but I have found another job. It doesn't start for 3 months. I'm going to have to miss 2 or 3 payments. Any reasonable lender will say to you, you know, give us a job letter, show us that you really do have another job, and they will let you not make those payments. They won't report you on your credit, and they'll let you pay them as soon as your new job kicks in and you actually have the money. Amortization periods. That is the amount of time it takes to pay off a mortgage. If you make a certain payment over a certain period of time, you pay off a mortgage. You pick certain timelines when you get a mortgage. People pick a 20-year amortization period, a 25, a 30. And then there were the days when we could have 35s and 40s. Ah, those were the days. Not anymore. But if you've chosen a 20-year amortization period, you're paying off your mortgage faster and you pay more money per month. You can switch that amortization period to a 30-year amortization. So now you're spreading your payments over 30 years instead of 20 years, and your payment goes down. So that's another way to lower your payments and get back in control. Some banks will let you capitalize your missed payments. In other words, you take whatever payments you've missed, you add them to the principal. So instead of having to pay your 3 missed payments, you take those 3 missed payment number, add it to the existing principal, and then you rework your payments to now pay those 3 missed payments over the rest of the course of the mortgage. But it bumps your mortgage payment up a little bit. But if after 3 months you're back in position to pay, that's not so bad. So those are all ways to adjust and catch up on payments. Plus, CMHC says quite clearly as their last kind of training point that they will look at any solution that you bring to them that's unique to you. It doesn't matter. If you come up with something that has a reasonable chance of you getting your mortgage paid up, they will listen to you and try and work with you. So that's what CMHC says in the pre-foreclosure situation. All right, so you're in trouble. Doesn't look like you think you can catch up. So if you're in those kinds of scenarios, what can you do? So I got my first one up there. It says, just sell it. I'm just waiting for somebody to throw a brick at me and say, how creative is that, Barry, for God's sake, selling the property? I could have thought of that. Anyway, selling is, it turns out to be a creative strategy because it's hard to do. You have to get your head around selling the property, and especially what you have to get your head around is if your decision is, I have to sell, then here's what normal people do. I got to sell. Got to sell. But I want to get as much out of it as I can. Check the comps, talk to my realtor. What'll I price it at? Okay, I've got a price. Man, I hope I get that price. And invariably, the price they've set for their sale is last week's price or last month's price. And in a falling market, they never price the property right. It's always a higher price than it ought to be. And then when it doesn't sell, they go, ah, man. Okay, I guess I have to lower the price. But again, it's price behind the curve. So you chase the property down till you get to the point where you're so screwed that you go, all right, I give up, and you sell it for whatever. You capitulate. That's the word. You capitulate. So make sure you price properties right in the I've got to sell scenario, because that's the point of it, is selling and getting out of it and taking your lumps. You're really taking your lumps. You can do other things, like you can try and sell it on your own if you think you're a whiz, or you can use a realtor if you want. But you can do that, sell it on your own, reduce commission realtors. Now, on the selling side, you can do other things as well. If you have a property that is not horribly underwater, that's an attractive property overall, that might rent out okay, and the trouble is on your side, not on the property side, you can, in the selling of it, use creative selling techniques like rent to own. Rent to own is a very creative technique, and in tough times, it's actually quite attractive to people, especially where you think you can price it coming out of the downturn. Also, you can use an agreement for sale to sell your property. So if you don't want to sell it through a realtor and expend those monies, you can think about rent to own or agreements for sale on the I just have to sell it side of things. Deal sharing, JVs. You can think about these, whether it's your personal home that you live in or whether it's an investment property. Again, if your trouble is you and your ability to make payments and not really the property's trouble, you can, and I would look at this where there's a fair amount of equity in the property. It's where people might be most interested. You can, offer a decent rental property or in your personal home to someone where you might turn it into a rental property on a joint venture basis. Why not? Why not think about, if you can't make it, sell an interest in the property to get some cash to help you catch up and live to fight another day. Think about that. The negative cash flow option. I had a couple of clients in the last month call me up and go, Barry, the rental market has collapsed. I can't rent it properly. I'm $300, I'm $350 negative cash flow. I may as well just let the bank take it. Oh yeah, okay, well, what'd you pay for that property? $300,000. What kind of a mortgage? An 80% conventional mortgage. So, calculator. Oh, you've got $60,000 into that property. Is this like doom and gloom forever? Is the market collapse forever? What are you experiencing? Turns out that it looks like it could be short-term trouble for both of these clients. So I say to them, why think about letting it go to foreclosure and ruining your credit if what you have is short-term? You've got $60,000 into this property. Why don't you think about sucking up and eating that $300 negative cash flow for 2 years? 300 times 12 is 3,600, times 2 is 7,200. So that's a $7,200 negative cash flow bump, bite that you have to absorb over 2 years, but you believe you have a chance coming out the other end. Why isn't that better than jingle mailing the keys to the bank and losing your $60,000? The negative cash flow option. Just make sure you're not throwing properties away where you shouldn't. Other creative things. Title in lieu. Title in lieu. Title in lieu. Sounds like a tune, doesn't it? It's like some sort of New Orleans tune. What it stands for is a title in lieu of foreclosure, or in other jurisdictions they call it deed in lieu of foreclosure. This is a scenario where you're in trouble and you really think you can't recover. Say, using our Fort McGregor example, where the current mortgage is 205 and the value is 150, that for the moment looks to be an unrecoverable situation in Fort McMurray. another $5,000 for legals. Now we're up to $60,000. The title in lieu of foreclosure, what you're looking to do is talk to your lender and say to them, I have a non-recourse mortgage on this property. Here's the comps, here's the stats, here's the facts. And let's just say we're not arguing about the facts. The bank understands that this property is about $60,000 in the hole. And if they foreclose and take it away, that's what they're going to lose, $60,000. So your proposal to them is to say, I'll tell you what, I will sign a transfer of land, transferring the property to you. I will give you a quit claim, whereby I give up all my rights in the property. I will give you the keys, and I had one client say to me, and I'm going to make sure that I pay a couple of payments so that by the time the bank gets the property back, there'll still be a couple of payments made, and they'll have time to put it through their marketing machine and get rid of it. And in return for not ruining my credit, because that was my client's concern, is they didn't want to ruin their credit, I will pay you $10,000. And that was my client's plan. So if you just package up these properties and give them back to the bank, they will, I'm advised by our mortgage brokers, do a foreclosure credit report on you, and that really is a horrible black mark on your credit. Horrible black mark. So many of my clients who are looking at the foreclosure side of things are looking to avoid the black credit mark that you get when you're into a foreclosure. So, title in lieu of foreclosure, it only will work if you have the conventional non-recourse mortgage. It won't work with the CMHC mortgage because you don't have that non-recourse. If you got CMHC, you're responsible, period. That's part of the price you pay for getting low down payments. So it only works with conventional mortgages. The other key item here is to find someone at banks that will actually talk to you about this. If you just go to your branch, they might kick you up to the manager, but even the manager won't be able to make decisions on this. You have to get sort of somehow senior up the chain. And it's not going to work with the bank's help desk. As soon as you phone them and talk about paying them less than what's owed on the mortgage, they turn into, well, you'll have to talk to our foreclosure lawyer. So you got to find somebody senior at banks who will help you. In Edmonton last night, I was talking to Wade Fenner, who's a foreclosure expert, and his theory is that lenders live to cut their costs, and so it's why you can't, if you're calling in, it's hard to get them. They're chopping people all the time. And if they had a big program to deal with all these foreclosures, they'd have to hire a whole bunch more people to administer the program. So they're just going to go, it's a drop in the bucket. We don't care. But I still think you can. So I don't want you to lose the notion that if you're a long way underwater on a conventional mortgage, that you should take a run at negotiating with the bank to give it back to them on a negotiated dollar figure. The unilateral versus negotiated. I had an idea at one time that we could do this on our own. We just do the transfer of land ourselves, do the quit claim, do the keys and send it to the bank. But you have to sign an affidavit of value as the bank's agent. Since you're not really the bank's agent, then could also, you know, sort of be a criminal offense. So we've abandoned that notion. Let's not do that on our own. All right, what's next? The process. Once you miss a payment, I think you guys might know this, but really you get a couple of calls from the bank. Why can't you pay? What's going on? You have nice conversations. Don't ignore these calls. Try and work it out. Then if you're still not paying, the lender will send you a letter, kind of a demand letter. Hey, you're two payments behind. You got to pay or we'll have to take action. And if you still don't pay, they will send it now to the foreclosure lawyer. So now it's out of the bank's administrative side of things and it's off to the bank's foreclosure lawyer. The first thing he does is send you another much more formal official lawyer demand letter saying, if you don't pay by, we will sue you. And then when you don't pay, they start suing you by the statement of claim. That starts the process. And there's a whole bunch of court appearances. And by, the property is judicially listed with a realtor. So some realtor gets the listing to sell the property. If it sells, great, there's a new owner. If it doesn't sell, it gets foreclosed and transferred into the bank's name. So that's kind of roughly how the process works. Your options? Well, when they file that statement of claim starting the action, you can file a statement of defense. And you set out all the reasons why they shouldn't win against you. But really, it's hard to defend a foreclosure. If you owe the money, how are you going to defend? There's no point hiring me and spending a whole bunch of money to figure out and file a complicated statement of defense if there's really no way of winning. The next one, though, you can file is something called the demand of notice. A demand of notice is a document that says, well, I'm not going to defend this vigorously, but I want to know when you're going to court and what steps you're taking. And the reason that's important for you is because you have a chance at various points in the proceeding to put up your hand in court and go, yeah, judge, I do have something to say. And you can do it on your own. And if the something that you have to say is, well, guess what? My job came through and now I can catch up. Or I got an inheritance. Well, I don't really have it yet, but here's the letter from my lawyer and I will have it in 5 months and I'll get enough to catch up. So I want some extra time. So the demand of notice tells you what's going on and you have a chance to go to court and say your piece if it's appropriate to do so. So I kind of like the demand of notice. Or you can do what most people do. I'm screwed. I'm not doing anything. Most people don't do anything. They just let the bank roll along through this. Other things that on the demand of notice side that you can do are some of my clients are fine with getting all that paperwork coming to them at their house and the process servers show up. And, you know, there's just lots of paper and documents and court appearances in a foreclosure. And they're fine with it all coming to them. But some of them go, I really hate that, Barry. I want you to be the place where all that stuff comes. Let it come to you and you can tell me what's going on. And if I have to get involved, I get involved. So that's two ways you can use the demand of notice. Timing. If it's your personal residence, then you get lots of time to bring a mortgage back. Really, if you got any kind of equity, the court will give you at least 6 months. So by the time there's a couple of demand letters and a statement of defense and the time that takes to roll its way through, and then it goes to court, and then you get 6 months. If you've got some equity on a personal residence, from start to finish, you probably have 9 to 10 months before you would lose the property. Different on investment properties, though. And if you don't have any equity in an investment property, a lender can get a foreclosure order pretty quickly. So, and you can always go ask for more time. Again, that goes back to the demand of notice thing. If life changes, even though you're right in the foreclosure process, I mean, you can literally before the title changes into the bank's name, if you kind of rush into court at the very last second, I've got the check, they'll stop it and let you keep your house. Courts don't want to take houses away from people. So we talked about the non-recourse mortgage. The other aspect of this is mortgage products have proliferated in the last, say, 25 years. There used to be nothing but a plain vanilla mortgage. Just a mortgage registered against the title. That's all there was. And if it was a conventional mortgage, you're protected. They can only take the property. They can't sue you for any deficiencies. Now, banks aren't stupid, are they? They're full of smart guys. And the smart guys know that in Alberta, we have these non-recourse mortgages. So they have tried to put together other products. The classic one, I mean, it's the HELOC, the Home Equity Line of Credit. You go to the bank and you sign a line of credit agreement or some sort of loan agreement collaterally secured on your property by a mortgage. Classic. Scotiabank, Scotia Total Equity Plan, STEP mortgages. If you're buying your property for $300,000, they'll put a mortgage on for $300,000 and fund it up to 80%, which would be, what, $240,000. And then as the value of the property rises, you can get more money without having to do more paperwork. I saw one the other day where the mortgage got redone 3 times and also was tied into Visa cards. And the bank was foreclosing and they were arguing that because it was a step mortgage with all these other wrinkles and crinkles, that it was a recourse mortgage, not a non-recourse mortgage. So you have to be careful about what you have. Just because it isn't CMHC doesn't mean it's non-recourse. Banks are clever. They put all these products on So if you're in trouble and you think you're just going to let it go because it's non-recourse, I want you to look very carefully, or phone me and get me to look very carefully at what your actual financing is to make sure you're not going to get caught on that, because it's a big bite when you're looking to pick up that extra 60K. All right, so what did we learn tonight? A little bit, I hope. So, I mean, the key thing is that you really need to educate yourself about how this goes. We talked about three blogs that I've already done, barrymcguire.ca. Go and search foreclosures or quit claims, mortgages. Those blogs will pop up. Take charge of your debt. If you search and put in your browser, take charge of your debt. That is a Government of Canada portion of their website where they talk about debt and what you can do. And there's some great comments there on credit. Great place to educate yourself about it. Key thing is get on it early. Don't let the foreclosure juggernaut start to run you over. So be on it early. And on those non-recourse mortgages, don't assume that just because it's not CMHC that it is non-recourse. You should mostly be protected, but sometimes you might not be. So get an opinion on that.
Thanks for listening to Barry McGuire's Tales from the Trenches. Get the inside scoop on real estate investing from one of Canada's foremost real estate lawyers. To print this tale, and for more valuable investing insights, go to www.barrymcguire.ca.